This is Special Team Coverage. Maureen Brown found guilty on News 104.5 WOKV. Now here's your host, John Engel.
Fraud trial of now former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown. By now, you've probably heard the news. 18 of 22 counts. She's been found guilty, including the big one, conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud. That's the first count, which we were watching very, very closely. Stephanie Brown has been providing us some incredible coverage from down at the courthouse for the better part of, a week and a half now? It feels like.
Three weeks, John.
Has it been 3 weeks? I don't even know how long it's been. But it has been a grueling and slow at times and exciting at other times. Today was a huge day for us. We got that notification from you in our email inboxes, Stephanie, around I think it was 1:45 in the afternoon. We were told the verdict is in, and then it was a mad dash to figure out what was going to happen, and eventually we found out 18 of 22 counts, she's guilty.
And just a scene set for you a little bit, it was actually a little unusual how we found out that this verdict was in. So to build some of the suspense, let me take you back actually to a little bit earlier today first when we had a question from the jury. They basically wanted to see a witness transcript as part of their deliberations. A pretty simple question, but something the judge didn't immediately rule on. He was considering whether that was something that he wanted to give to them to use. So a little while later, the attorneys and Ms. Brown start coming back into the courtroom because we're expecting the judge to be issuing a ruling on that specific piece of evidence and whether he was going to let that into the deliberation room. Well, just about 30 seconds or so before he was ready to take the bench, we heard a knock on the jury room door. And, you know, I sound excited when I say that because after sitting in the courtroom for days on end waiting for deliberations, we came to know that a knock on the jury room meant something was happening. Sometimes they wanted to take a break. Sometimes they had a new question. So it was really not clear at this point what exactly was going to take place. But again, this is all about 30 seconds before the judge himself was already set to be on the bench. So then the court security officer finds out what the jury wants. I see a chain of whispered statements going all the way to the judge. As he sits down, he gets told what the jury said. And then in the next breath, he tells the court, I was here to rule on the transcript, but I've now been told that we have a verdict. So it was at that point that he called a roughly 15-minute recess because he had told all the parties that he would give notice ahead of time so that they could get anybody to the courtroom that they wanted. And then at that point, we reconvened. It was shortly after 2 o'clock, and John, that's when things started happening.
And what was it like for you sitting in that courtroom? Obviously, your eyes were probably glued on Corrine Brown as they go count by count, reading off the charge that is facing her. How does that play out? Is it like you see in an episode of Law and Order where it's count by count? You know, conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud, guilty. Count two. How did that go?
It's not dissimilar necessarily. What happened first is the judge actually addressed the jury overall to say, I understand you have a verdict. Is that the case? And have you, in fact, reached this verdict unanimously? Because we know that in these federal court cases, all 12 jurors are required to be unanimous on each of the counts. When the foreperson confirmed that that was, in fact, the case, then the judge, District Judge Timothy Corrigan, took the verdict form that had been filled out, and he had to verify that everything looked in order. Not to add even more suspense to the scenario, it turns out that on one of the counts, count number 5, they had actually put an X by both spots, guilty and not guilty.
One
of them had been crossed down and it had been initialed so that they tried to make it clear, but Corrine actually gave the form back to the foreperson to make sure that she circled what the actual verdict was so that they could be entirely clear. When he got that back, that was the point that he started reading down the list. So he gave the preface saying the case number once again, and then everybody, it seemed like all of the supporters, because the courtroom was full, and it seemed like all of the supporters at that point were holding their breath as he started to read count one, conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud. And as soon as he said guilty on that count, you could feel all of those deep breaths that had been held in just deflating. A lot of her supporters starting to hang their heads, one starting to sob. Brown herself, meanwhile, as you mentioned, I was keeping a close eye, and she just continued to look straight ahead. I was also following the jury to see if they were giving any expression or indication as these verdicts continued to be read. And as we've seen really throughout the entire trial proceedings, they have been relatively stone-faced, poker-faced, not giving too much insight into any frustrations or, you know, any indications of what exactly was happening in the deliberation room. So as the guilty verdicts continued to mount on, again, the supporters just solemnly looking ahead. But really, when everything let out, I was hearing comments like, you know, it's a shame. Money does wicked things. She has done so much for us. So it's clear that even throughout all of this, she still has a lot of very passionate supporters that are absolutely standing by her.
Again, John Engel and Stephanie Brown breaking down the conviction of now former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown today. The huge news we've been following. We were on air for over 2 hours after these verdicts were read out. 18 of 22 counts guilty. And later on in the show, we'll be taking your calls. Write down the number now, 340-1045. That's 904-340-1045. We'll be getting your reaction. Reactions pouring in from all over the place. Even Washington keeping a close eye on this. Washington insider Jamie Dupree was exchanging emails with me earlier this afternoon saying how interested he was in this. And obviously a former member of Congress who just recently gave up her seat to Representative Al Lawson, who now assumes that post. Now, even with this conviction, Stephanie, 18 of 22 counts, we still have some unanswered questions. We didn't get everything.
This is Special Team Coverage. Corrine Brown found guilty on News 104.5 WOKV. Now here's your host, John Engel.
18 out of 22 counts in the federal fraud trial of former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown. Guilty. Four of those not guilty. Joined by Stephanie Brown down at the courthouse. We've been talking about the nuts and bolts of this case in the last segment as we're doing a special edition of Jacksonville's Evening News for the rest of the hour. We'll walk you up all the way to Brian Kilmeade at 7. Stephanie, we were talking about the environment of the courtroom when that verdict came down and Corrine Brown's reaction or lack thereof, the faces of the jury and all of that, and what comes next with sentencing being delayed maybe as much as 90 days and Corrine Brown being able to stay out of jail in the meantime. But leading up to this, there was also a lot of moving parts in those final week, I guess, in the final couple of days when it came to the testimony of her close aide, Ronnie Simmons. We were talking last segment. I said the biggest thing that I grabbed onto from this entire trial was Ronnie Simmons, who's already taken a plea, taking the stand and saying, well, if I really wanted to steal all the money for myself, why would I have given it to Corrine Brown? And that seemed like a really pivotal moment in this entire trial as the prosecution was working to take all this evidence that they had and connect it to her, showing that there was intent and direction and, you know, proof that she was involved and not just a victim.
Defense has essentially said that Brown admitted to bad management of her office, bad management of her finances, but not intentionally doing anything criminally wrong. And prosecutors, with the burden of proof on them, had to work to show that Brown was an active and knowing participant in these sham donations. Basically, Brown was arguing that when she was soliciting money for One Door for Education, she had every reason to believe that the money was going to be going toward a good purpose, and that when she was getting these cash deposits from Ronnie Simmons, she thought maybe it was travel reimbursements or any variety of things. One of the other very notable moments that came from her testimony is prosecutors asked her to explain sometimes $10,000 in deposits in a given month, and her only response was that she had birthdays, boyfriends, and Christmas,
yeah,
and that they may
was.
Be accountable for some of those cash deposits. So when the prosecutor started focusing in, their key question was, if in fact Ronnie Simmons was stealing from One Door and it was without Brown's knowledge, then why is he giving money to her? Why wouldn't he just be keeping the money for himself? And that was something that prosecutors continued to circle back to, because Simmons would withdraw money from the one-door ATM and then deposit it in Brown's account. So what we heard in the closing arguments from the defense is, well, maybe Simmons was stealing from Brown, too. You've never shown that he didn't have her personal checkbook. So maybe he was taking money from her account, and then he was using the one-door money to deposit into her account in order to prevent her account from overdrawing and putting anybody on alert. And the prosecution again said, think of the simplest answer. If he's going to steal, why steal from Brown and use one door to cover it up? Why not just steal from one door? So, John, that was absolutely a theme that I saw continue to surface in the testimony, and that I have every reason to believe was an important factor for the jury.
Well, and the defense did their very best to paint Ronnie Simmons as not a credible source on this case. You know, he took a plea deal, he was stealing, and now he's ready to talk about his boss. And then, you know, that the only avenue they had was to show that Ronnie Simmons is only out to save his own behind in this whole ordeal. But it appears that that testimony may have been huge for the jury to see that they could envision Corrine Brown directing and having clear knowledge of what was going on. Now, when we come back on a special edition of Jacksonville's Evening News, we're going to take a look at the reaction that we're already starting to see from lawmakers and city leaders after hearing this news that Corrine Brown has been convicted on 18 of 22 federal fraud charges in this trial now as we await sentencing. We're going to see what they have to say and get to some of your calls as well. That's next.
As well, before Jenna jumps back on TV, make sure you're tuned in, of course, to CBS 47 and Fox 30 Action News Jax. I'm going to bring her in once more to talk a little bit about the ambiance inside, because as I mentioned, you know, I have been inside of the courtroom for every minute. Jenna has as well. And, you know, I kind of talked them through today already what we experienced as the verdicts were being read. What were some of the moments that I guess stood out to you from being inside of the courtroom?
Well, I think the biggest moment for me was actually shortly before the verdicts were read, about 20 minutes before, all the Corrine Brown and attorneys on both sides and the judge had already returned to the courtroom. They were there to talk about this question, and we heard this knock on the door, and it seemed that even the judge was surprised to hear that the jury had come to a verdict. I mean, after 12 hours of deliberations on Monday and Tuesday, all of a sudden we have this new juror that's swapped in, this alternate that's swapped in, and boom, this went much faster than I think people were expecting. Now, as the verdicts were being read aloud, I watched the jurors, what their expressions were like, and they seemed very thoughtful and confident was what stood out to me as those verdicts were being read aloud. And I do have a copy of the actual verdict form that they filled out. You can find that on my Twitter and then also on actionsjax.com.
And I know that I had talked a little bit about, you know, getting the perception that the jury really seemed the same throughout the trial. You describe it as thoughtful and confident, and I think that's a good description, but really throughout everything, just not much of emotion. They didn't seem to have many tells.
Yeah, it was very even keel, very stoic, listening intently for the most part. And I think that was a big hallmark of this trial, actually, other than Corrine Brown's emotional outbursts on the stand. This was a very calm, cool, collected trial from the testimony to the jury.
And that emotional outburst that she had, I mean, if we look back on the last 3 weeks before you head back out here, is that kind of what stands out most to you? Or what from being inside of the courtroom are you taking out of this most?
That is absolutely the one thing that stands out in my mind the most when I think about this trial is Corrine Brown's emotional breakdown on the stand. She was talking about Ronnie Simmons, obviously her former chief of staff, who testified against her during this trial and pleaded guilty, and she was talking about him and suddenly started sobbing uncontrollably, pounding her fist on the witness stand, and she told the judge she needed a break. And as the jurors filed out of the room, she yelled, "He's trying to destroy my life." Now, it's still not clear whether she was talking about the prosecutor who was questioning her, Tyson Duva, or whether she was talking about Ronnie Simmons, but that for me, I think, was the most memorable moments of all 8 days of testimony.
And Jenna is going to continue to bring you coverage through our partners, CBS 47, Fox 30, Action News, Jax. And they are, you know, extended coverage as we have been as well. We've been coverage partners throughout this process. And really, that's the asset here. We had two people inside of the courtroom at all times to make sure that we were following every minute of this process. John, as you heard, a lot of emotion, a lot of procedure, a lot happening inside those doors.
And can I share what was my, you know, biggest takeaway from this trial as well? Because, Jenna went back to that emotional outburst from Corrine Brown. Obviously, that testimony and the choice by the defense to put Corrine Brown on the stand will be debated about whether that was the proper decision moving forward. But what I keep going back to is Ronnie Simmons, that aide who, when he was on the stand and was being questioned by the prosecution, they said something to along the line, Stephanie, of, well, isn't there an easier way to steal? Isn't there an easier way that you could have gotten the money? He says, well, if I wanted it just for myself, I would have kept it for myself. And I feel like when it came down to the formation of weaving in this evidence and connecting it to Corrine Brown on the side of the prosecution, they needed the jury to connect to those dots and trust in Ronnie Simmons. And that was just, what a moment that was when he took the stand.
Well, John, I think that sounds like something fantastic to talk about. I also think it's going to take us probably more than 30 seconds. So why don't we have people hang around through the break and we can go in depth on that?
Sure. We'll get to that next segment, as well as some reactions we're already starting to get from your local representatives, from your leaders in local government. They're reacting to Corrine Brown. We'll get to that as a special edition of Jax Mills Evening News for the federal fraud trial of now former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown continues next.
This is special team coverage. Corrine Brown found guilty on News 104.5 WOKV. Now here's your host, John Engel.
340-1045, that's the number to call to have your voice heard. We want to get reactions from all over Jacksonville. After the news dropped, 18 of 22 counts guilty for former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown, joined by Stephanie Brown down at the courthouse, who's been covering every minute of this trial for us. Stephanie, we have a caller on the line. I think this is a question that might go right into your wheelhouse here. Kate Anderson is in downtown Jacksonville. She wants to know something about Corrine Brown's testimony. Kate, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. The first outstanding issue to me was the fact that not only was money diverted to her directly, but also to her daughter. And how could that be appropriate under these circumstances? So Ms. Brown said that there were reimbursements for expenses and other things like that, but how could that go to her daughter? And then the second issue, anyone who has been involved with foundations recognizes that she would have to have been on top of how much money was actually being expended towards students who were supposed to have been helped. So to me, those are two really serious issues. And I'm very sorry for her, but at the same time, in my opinion, the jury was very deliberate. They were cautious, and I think that they made wise decisions based on the information that was provided.
Yeah, I think those are really two good questions. And what I want to do is bring in a little context from the testimony, because there are actually things that the defense attempted to address in the testimony that we heard. So, Kate, your first question was about the money that was going to Corrine Brown's daughter. To catch you up to speed, if you haven't necessarily followed this trial closely, basically, this case revolves around some money being funneled from this sham charity, One Door for Education, through a few channels and ultimately down into the pockets of Brown and a few others. Now, there were some cases where Brown's daughter, Chantrell, got some money as well, according to how prosecutors have kind of outlined the money that trickled down. So Brown did attempt to offer an explanation for that. She said that she lives with her daughter in the D.C. area. They share a home and they have for an extended period of time. So she says that any money that was coming coming to her and then to her daughter ultimately was a loan repayment from a former part-time staffer, and that the money was going to her daughter so that her daughter could pay bills on the house that they share together. Now, prosecutors countered that, you know, Brown's testimony was the first time we had heard about any sort of a loan repayment. And in fact, the person she said was paying back this loan was somebody who said that she was just writing checks like Brown told her to do. So it was in direct conflict to a prior witness's testimony, and that witness didn't really have all that much of a stake in the game or incentive to lie, according to the prosecutor. So ultimately, it seems like the jury sides with what the witness said and not what Brown said, which is that this was, in fact, just sham charity money that was being funneled through. And then the other point that you raised, Kate, about this foundation and knowing how it was running, that is one important distinction, is that while Brown promoted One Door for Education and promoted it as a nonprofit, she was not, at least as both sides tell it, involved in founding the group. That was done by Carla Wiley. And the defense says she was not involved, obviously, in running it, so that she wouldn't necessarily have a lot to do with governing and checking the books and things like that. But what prosecutors countered with was, well, she's a politician and she's promoting this organization. Wouldn't you expect there would be photo ops? Wouldn't she be asking about kids who are supposed to be getting scholarships from this group? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, there was no evidence of that. So that was an area that, again, prosecutors were able to address apparently effectively because of the verdicts that we've seen handed down by showing some of the things that she didn't do that you might normally expect be done in this situation.
And Kate, that's a great call. You can call in and ask a question of Stephanie, who's probably the best resource on this trial that's out there right now. 340-1045 is the number to call in. You'll touch base with the call screener, and we'll see what question you have. Now, Stephanie, a lot of people from the outside, as you're observing this trial, we talk to listeners every day, you talk to your neighbors as you're walking around, and everyone was talking about this trial of Corrine Brown, and it seemed to always center on, how could she not have known? Like, how can you play that card as a defense? And that's, I think, part of what Kate was hinting at there as well. So it is a good call. It's a good point. And I'm glad you were able to clear that up for her about her actual association with the charity. She was, a face of it, but it could claim that she wasn't in the inner workings of how everything played out. Now, I want to get to some reactions that we're starting to see from around Northeast Florida, from your local representatives and from members of Congress, actually. Al Lawson, who ended up beating Corrine Brown in the last primary and is now a member of Congress, tweeted out about 3 hours ago, "My thoughts and prayers are with Corrine Brown during this difficult time. We're grateful for her many years of service to Jacksonville." And Audrey Gibson, the state senator from Jacksonville, going quite a bit further, speaking with our partner Action News, Jack, she was just devastated. Listen to this.
The Corrine Brown that I know is not the Corrine Brown who was characterized in those charges.
And then we also heard from the Duval GOP issuing a statement from its chairman saying, "It's now clear that Corrine Brown put her own personal gain before her constituents, people who needed her guidance and service to help the community, not herself." So, Stephanie, as we start to see the reactions pour in from, you know, law enforcement and prosecutors, politicians, it doesn't seem like anyone's position where they were before this trial has changed.
In fact, I'd say it's probably just reinforced. You know, what I hear speaking with supporters throughout the course of this trial is, you know, they blame the influence of money. They blame the influence of Ronnie Simmons. They say maybe there was, in fact, wrongdoing, but there has been so much that Brown has done that they're still very grateful for her. On the other side, you have the people who, as the evidence was being outlined, looked and saw things that reinforced their suspicions or concerns. I want to add in, because because earlier in the show, we played some sound from her defense attorney, James Smith, talking about how their fight is not done. They're going to continue. They're going to push for a new trial. We also have gotten a statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office. So there were three prosecutors involved in this case, including assistant U.S. attorneys out of the Middle District of Florida, which is the Jacksonville area, and somebody who represented the Department of Justice Public Integrity Unit. So what we've actually gotten is not a statement from them. They did not speak after the trial, but the office did issue a statement on behalf of the acting United States Attorney, W. Stephen Muldrow. And it says, former Congresswoman Brown chose greed and personal gain over the sacred trust given to her by the community that she served for many years. These guilty verdicts underscore our office's resolve in holding public officials at all levels of government accountable for their actions. In this case, former Congresswoman Brown stole money that was donated to on the false promise of helping further the educational goals of underprivileged children. So, John, some really strong statements, as you mentioned, what we would expect to hear from prosecutors and what we've heard from day one.
And we've been hearing from you as well. If you don't want to call in to talk to us live, 340-1045, if you do, you can always use the News 104.5 app. We're getting tons of open mics from this trial. Listen to this one.
Let me understand this. 18 out of 22 convicted guilty, and Brown is not in jail? Something is absolutely wrong with our judicial system.
And what that open mic is referring to is the fact that the judge has said sentencing for Corrine Brown may not come for 90 days. I know that's the source of our next call. Mike, on the South Side, you have a question. Mike, what do you have?
Yes, my question is relatively the same thing. Why is she able to walk for 90 days until sentencing? She might be a nice person. Is that what they're trying to say? Is she's done good in the community? And all of a sudden she can just, you know, wait 90 days before going to jail?
It's a great question. Basically, what happened is until now, she has been out on bond. She posted bond pretty much as soon as she was indicted and arrested. And the judge today said that Brown has held to the conditions of her bond. There have been no violations. And because of that, he is allowing those conditions to continue. That's not to say she's not being monitored. There is a probation officer that's now going to be checking in on her and putting together a report for the court, which will ultimately be used in the sentencing process. With this kind of case, what you also have is the two other co-conspirators, Brown's chief of staff Ronnie Simmons and the One Door for Education president Carla Wiley. Their sentencings have also both been put on hold pending this trial because part of their plea agreements were that they provide substantial cooperation in the trial, and ultimately based on that, the prosecutors would be making a sentencing recommendation. So because you also have some other sentencing hearings that are tied into this, that's kind of what influences the timeline. But the main reason she's allowed to stay out right now is because she has been on bond for a substantial period of time and has not violated it to this point. But of course, again, she is being closely monitored. So if there's any change or any violation, the court can still act as it needs.
Well, and Stephanie, this is by no means a surprising question that we're starting to get more and more frequently. Why does she get 90 days? If I was convicted on 18 of 22 counts in federal court, I would have gone to jail that afternoon. I mean, that's what people are continuing to go back to, especially on the side that has long thought she was guilty, is they're wondering, well, why is she getting this kind of treatment and maybe your average person wouldn't? And so it's not completely surprising that people are having that reaction. But as you mentioned, there is a lot of procedural aspects that still have to be taken care of. And James Smith, the defense attorney for Corrine Brown, said, look, people have been convicted of federal counts in the past and haven't gone to jail at all. And so I think in the best case scenario for the defense is they're hoping she never has to go to jail, let alone in the next 90 days.
And when we talk about 90 days, it's important to emphasize that the judge said it would probably be no sooner than that because of all of the things that are in play. But of course, it could be longer than that. just because there's so much happening. That's something that they're starting to look at the scheduling for. When you talk about some of the motions that could be taking place until then, that's also potentially another influencing factor. Ultimately, there was no statement that was made that said, you're a former congressperson, so we're letting you stay free. It really, the focus was the fact that there had been bond already, that bond had not been violated, and ultimately that would be allowed to continue. And as for the sentencing hearing, because, you know, as our caller mentioned, John, as you mentioned, she has, you know, this reputation, and maybe that is a factor. Well, during the sentencing hearing itself, Brown will be allowed to present evidence that shows her character, shows what she has done, and shows, you know, the likelihood of her reoffending or anything to that extent. Ultimately, as they try to convince the judge, their end goal is hoping for no prison time. Obviously, that's not the goal of prosecutors, but there will be an entire hearing process where the judge will listen to evidence that's presented from either side before ultimately making his deliberation.
Sure, and it's going to be an uphill battle for that defense. I'm trying to, you know, convince the judge, as now it is up to a judge, not a jury, in this sentencing procedure, that, you know, 18 guilty counts out of 22 related to hundreds of thousands of dollars in, you know, misused funds from a sham charity, and to, you know, want to get leniency based on character and reputation in this town and in this area in Northeast Florida. That's going to be their goal, but obviously a tough one ahead, and something we're going to be following very closely. We're going to get to more of your calls when we come back. 340-1045. I'm John Engel along with Stephanie Brown. This is a special edition of Jacksonville's Evening News. The trial and conviction of former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown. We'll be right back.
This is special team coverage. Corrine Brown found guilty on News 104.5 WOKV. Now here's your host, John Engel.
Welcome back. I'm also joined by Stephanie Brown, still down at the courthouse. I guess this is the last night we'll have to say that. Stephanie, I know I've been tossing it to you in these special editions of Jacksonville's Evening News for the entire week. Is this the last time we're going to have you down at the courthouse? Do you finally get some relief soon?
I guess I'm going to be driving the downtown bureau, aka our nice news vehicle, down to the station for the last time. Yeah, at least great. Until the appeals and or sentencing hearing start.
340-1045. That's the number to call if you have any comments about the conviction of Corrine Brown, the former Northeast Florida Congresswoman, 18 out of 22 counts, and the big one, count one, conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud relating to that sham charity, One Door for Education. Corrine Brown's defense saying this is only the first phase. We're not done yet, saying they're going to motion for a new trial, and that, you know, when it comes to sentencing, a lot of people have been convicted in the past and haven't served jail time. That's their best case scenario, but certainly an uphill battle for them. A couple of callers on hold right now. Karen in Fernandina Beach says, why isn't Corrine in police custody yet? We've been talking that, you know, it may be 90 days until the sentencing of Corrine Brown, and so the judge has determined that she is in a flight risk and isn't going to be violating the terms of her bond, which has been the case throughout this trial and since the indictment came down. So that's the reason why she isn't in jail already. And that's the decision of the judge. And you can take a stance one way or the other. A lot of people coming to us and saying, well, if I was on trial and I got convicted of 18 of 22 counts, I'd be in jail right now. Well, that's an opinion you can have. Tracy in Arlington asking, what exactly has the Congresswoman accomplished for the community? That's another discussion down the road that you can justify once we do get to sentencing. The defense will try to say that for two decades, Corrine Brown went to Washington and fought for Northeast Florida families. That's going to be their position, as Stephanie Brown has noted. Stephanie, when we look ahead, as we've detailed these counts and we've detailed the testimony and the closing arguments and the jury and the shakeup that this jury had being reformed only 2 days ago, as you look ahead, do you see any new challenges arising when it comes for the defense? What do they have next to look forward to?
Well, we've already mentioned that the defense does plan some legal maneuverings. They're going to be moving for a new trial. It's unclear right now exactly what grounds they're going to use for that. I can give you an idea. You know, there were objections that were noted inside of the courtroom at various points. For example, as you just mentioned, when a juror was removed from the panel yesterday and an alternate was put on the panel, the defense did make some kind of objection about all of that, but that objection was made behind closed doors. So we don't know exactly what the foundation was, but it's clear that there are a few things on the record that could potentially become points for appeal.
And Stephanie, we heard from Corrine Brown's defense attorney, James Smith, as they were walking out of the courtroom, and we've detailed that pretty extensively. Now, you also, you got a statement from the prosecution side, right? The government did speak out. They didn't do a gaggle or a press briefing or anything like that, but you did get a comment from them?
Yes, they issued a statement.
Okay, and we will continue to detail that online at WOKV.com. We have Wayne in Jacksonville. He wants to know about the appeals process. Wayne, what do you have? Now, it appears that Wayne has dropped the line. Well, you can always go to WOKV.com. We have all of this process detailed. I'm sure that Corrine Brown's defense is going to try to appeal. Stephanie, as they have said, this is the first phase, not the end in this conviction. What are her options moving forward? I know that we talked about that motion for a new trial. What additionally is there?
Well, I can project that one of the questions that the appeal caller may have had is, would she stay out of prison pending appeals? Because we know that we've already gotten that question a lot. And again, it is something that the judge would ultimately decide. But if she does continue to abide by the conditions of her release, it is possible that she continues to stay out of jail. Again, I want to emphasize that she has been out on bond this entire time. And the judge noted that it's because of that and because the conditions haven't been violated that she is allowed to continue that. As for what else could happen moving forward, it's really difficult to say. The attorney was tight-lipped about what kind of appeals he might be considering. Prosecutors, again, not speaking in any kind of a press gaggle, but you can imagine that they would continue to fight any kind of an appeal because, as we heard earlier this afternoon from our political and legal analyst, Rick Mullaney, this is something that the U.S. Attorney's Office in this area is going to hang their hat on as a massive political corruption prosecution that ended in conviction. So you can absolutely expect that it's something that they will continue to pursue, John.
And a historical moment, too. That's what Rick Mullaney kept going back to, and that people in Jacksonville are going to remember this for a long time because people have had strong feelings about Corrine Brown for many, many years before any indictment on a federal fraud charges. And now with this conviction, you would say that that's fuel to the fire on that side of the argument. And as we look around at these reactions, very interesting to see, you know, people like UNF President John Delaney, who testified, was a witness in this trial, correct, Stephanie?
Yes, he was one of three character witnesses, essentially, for the defense, people who got on the stand before Brown to speak about, you know, working with her and her work ethic and what kind of an impact she has had in this area.
When I saw that he issued a statement or made a comment that said something along the lines of, I supported Corrine Brown before this trial and I continue to support and believe her. So a lot of people who have worked closely with Corrine Brown have donated to this charity. Like we said, the two sides, the support Corrine Brown and the let's pin political corruption to the wall and finally bring a stop to it, those sides have both just strengthened more in their own cause, which is I think really a fascinating thing after you see 18 of 22 counts come back guilty.
There are so many other factors in this case, which is, I think, one of the key reasons. If you didn't have two other people that were involved, her chief of staff being one of them, somebody who was so close to her, then it might be a different case. But for her supporters, this is truly a case of someone who has worked hard, maybe let some of her personal oversight lapse, and trusted in the wrong people. But as the jury decided today, all of these transactions, all of these charitable donations that went into her pocket were done of her own free will.
For all those callers that are sitting on the line, we're sorry we couldn't get to your call, but you've been listening to a special hour of Jacksonville's Evening News where we've been detailing the federal fraud trial of now former Northeast Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown. 18 guilty counts out of 22 in this indictment and this long trial. Very complicated. A lot of twists near the end as well. Go see Stephanie Brown's extensive coverage at WOKV.com. If you missed anything, she is the source to get you all caught up. For Stephanie downtown at the courthouse, I'm John Engel. Thank you so much for tuning into our coverage.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.